Hi, and welcome to the Newbery Chronicles. This is a podcast where two people read through every Newbery medaling book, and then we talk about it. I'm Michael.
And I'm Rebecca.
And this time, we are talking about the 1993 Newbery Medal winning book, Missing May, by Cynthia Ryland. But first, we're going to talk about things we've been reading recently, which, since this podcast doesn't have like 2 months in between it and the previous episode, is going to be a little bit of a shorter segment. Rebecca,
yes.
What you been reading?
I read a book called Before We Were Yours by Lisa Wingate. This is a historical fiction novel, so obviously it's based on true events, but it is a story about this woman who trafficked all of these children in Memphis, Tennessee, in the 30s to the 50s, maybe the 20s to the 50s. Terribly tragic story, but this woman who would convince families, mainly families who were poor, that they should give their babies up for adoption, and then would basically sell them to really high-profile, wealthy clients. She had connections with like the juvenile courts and the hospitals. It was a very terrible thing, and now my mind is escaping me of the name of this woman. Anyway, this book was terribly tragic, but I was glad to learn about this, especially since it happened so close to my home, even though it was well before my time. It's just really devastating to think about how many of those kids were never reunited, for how long this was able to go on. And then she died of cancer before she stood trial. So I feel like there were a lot of families that didn't really get closure.
When did people start finding out what she was doing?
There was a whistleblower that kind of alerted people. Although she had so many connections, like people knew this was going on for a long time. And we're not only like turning a turning an eye to it, but also like really enabling her to continue doing these things. There's a lot of documentaries out there that the author pointed to, like at the end of her story, that I'd love to just discover more about and like hear people's stories. So I read that. I also read Flight Behavior by Barbara Kingsolver. I've been reading a lot of her books lately and really enjoying them. Barbara Kingsolver is not only a very talented and prolific author, but she's also like a naturalist. I think that she studied that in school and also did some work in that before she started writing. My memory's kind of hazy on that. But this book is about these butterflies that have historically landed in Mexico, and due to climate change, the community where they were living was wiped out by a mudslide. So when it gets cold, instead of going to Mexico, they land on this mountain in Appalachia. And it follows the story of the main character who's like figuring out her place in her own family, like feeling pretty discontent in her marriage, feeling like a misfit in her town. It's set, I should say, when I say Appalachia, it's set in Tennessee. It's set in our area of Appalachia, but further in the mountains. Anyway, so she is at the center of trying to figure out her own place in life, and then discovers these beautiful butterflies. So the story like asks a lot of questions about identity and about like our relationship to the planet, and also reflects on how like climate change is affecting everywhere, not just Mexico, but also their community. And it ends with a ginormous flood, which also feels very unfortunately timely considering the terrible flood that Appalachia is really reeling from right now. So anyway, it was a very good book, And I am babbling at this point, but it was good. It's your turn.
Okay.
I'm ready. A little bit tired, guys.
Yeah, Rebecca did not get very much sleep last night. She often doesn't get a lot of sleep. But last night was especially... She had, like, work to do. Anyway, I don't have a lot to say here because I've not read a complete book since we finished. I don't even remember if last time I talked about this on the podcast, but I started reading the book Rebecca by Daphne Maurier. And I think Rebecca talked about this Rebecca on the podcast, talked yes. about Rebecca on the podcast a year or two ago, maybe. Yes. And so per her recommendation, I'm reading it now. I have seen a couple movie versions of it, so I kind of know the contours of the story, although I realize that like the book is different in some ways, but it's not different in that many ways so far. Like I said, I'm about halfway through. It's good. You know, Daphne du Maurier is a good prose stylist, and the story is intriguing and fun. You know, it's fall times, and Rebecca's just slightly spooky. And so it's kind of fun to be reading that as the leaves are changing color and everything. Mm-hmm. But I really don't have a lot to say about it at the moment because I'm, like I said, I'm only halfway done. And, you know, I've not really gotten anything that's too different from either of the movies that I've seen of it. But, yeah, enjoying it. That's about it. I think we finished this, what we've been reading section.
So wait, you've seen the Hitchcock version?
Yeah.
Because I was actually talking about this book and these movies with somebody tonight at an event. So she was saying that she didn't like the new Rebecca, which we didn't care for either, but she loves the Alfred Hitchcock version.
The one with Armie Hammer?
Yeah.
Yeah, that one wasn't great. The Hitchcock one's really good.
So she said the same thing. So when we finish rereading it, I want to watch that.
Yes. Yeah, so that's what we've been reading. Under 8 minutes, we're done.
Good job.
With this section.
Let's pick it up. We're being slow.
Yeah, yeah. So
we want to be snappy and funny.
We want to be snappy. We don't want to be the podcast you turn on 2x speed. go ahead.
No, you go ahead. Talk about Cynthia Ryland.
Yeah, Cynthia Ryland, who wrote Missing May. She also wrote a bunch of other stuff. She wrote over 100 children's books. Has written. She's still alive and presumably could write and probably will write more children's books. But anyway, she has quite a bio here. So she's born in 1954 in a place called Hopewell, West Virginia, which has a Wikipedia page, but it's like two sentences on this Wikipedia page. And those two sentences inform you that it is an unincorporated area in like northern West Virginia, like up near like where Pennsylvania is. I found out that Cynthia Ryland's real name is Cynthia Smith. Ryland is actually her mother's maiden name, and she uses it as a pen name. So Cynthia Smith grew up in, you know, really isolated West Virginia. I found this quote that she gave in an interview one time describing her her upbringing is that she didn't do a lot of reading when she grew up because there was, quote, no public library, no money to buy books, no bookstores anyway. Most of her early life, the reading that she did was Archie comics and Jughead comics that she found in the drugstore, as well as some like paperback romances that she found too. And she didn't actually get into reading other things until college, where she discovered literature. But I'll get to that in a minute. So when she was four, her parents divorced, and her mother went to nursing school. And I guess went full-time to nursing school because she couldn't take care of Cynthia anymore. So Cynthia went to live with her grandparents, who lived an even more isolated existence in West Virginia. Apparently did not have electricity or running water or a car at her grandparents' house. And a lot of this stuff I'm bringing up because it feels like slightly reminiscent of Missing May. And apparently in a lot of her books, which I've never read any of her other books, but a lot of her books like... are about like kind of rural Appalachia and specifically rural West Virginia. Once her mother finished nursing school, she went back to live with her mother and was able to do like middle school and high school and all that. And apparently was really seriously dating this guy in high school and was going to marry him. But then they broke up. And so she decided to go to college instead. And she went to a school that now is known as University of Charleston, which is in Charleston, West Virginia, of course. It was under a different name at that time, but it's like a private university. That's when she really gets into reading literature. She like discovers literary fiction in college and really falls in love with that, and eventually goes to like gets her graduate or gets her undergraduate degree, and then goes to Marshall University and gets her master's in English and graduates from that. She didn't do a lot of writing, apparently, especially growing up, kind of like reading. She's actually not yet at the point where she's like, even though she's reading literature, she's not interested in writing it at this point. In fact, she says the only thing she really wrote as a kid was when in sixth grade she became infatuated with Paul McCartney. And so she wrote a story called My Adventures with the Beatles. Which I think is amazing. I hope she still has that. After she gets her degree in English, her master's degree in English, she starts to work in libraries. And I found varying places that said different things about where this happened. So she starts working in a library in Huntington, West Virginia. But then later on, she works in a library in Akron, Ohio. And one source said in Akron, Ohio, she worked in the children's library. Another source said in Huntington, she worked in a children's library. Whatever the case, working as a children's librarian was the first time she encountered children's literature because she didn't have access to it as a kid.
Oh.
And so she read like Goodnight Moon and like Charlotte's Web and stuff like that as an adult, as a librarian. And really fell in love with that, and that's when she became interested in starting to write children's literature. I'm pretty sure this probably happened in Huntington, because she didn't move to Akron until after she had like written her first children's book. So I'm guessing this was in Huntington, but multiple sources online said multiple things. Another thing I should point out is that a lot of the information about Cynthia Ryland online, at least, is dated from very long ago and on like websites that look very old and don't really cite sources and stuff, so who knows? In 1970, let's see, what year was it? In 1982, she wrote her first children's book, which is called When I Was Young in the Mountains, and it's about West Virginia. It's only 30 pages long, so I'm guessing it's like a picture book. But she won an award, an American Book Award. I don't know what that is. But she won that and got a lot of attention for that. And that encouraged her to continue writing books. She kind of bounces around, like, West Virginia. Eventually lands in Ohio, where she lives in Kent and goes to Kent State. While she is there, she gets a boyfriend.
I want to hear
Rebecca's feelings on this boyfriend.
Okay, let me just preface this before you guys, you're waiting in suspense here.
Yeah, who knows Rebecca Ryland's boyfriend in Kent, Ohio is.
Michael is researching this author and just starts giggling. Just starts giggling and will calm down and then start snickering again. He's like, I'm not telling you what I just read because I want your pure reaction for the pod.
And the pure reaction was slow because you were reading my notes.
I'm just kicking myself because I was getting impatient with your... But I was like, when are we getting to the juicy bits? And then I read over your shoulder. So do share with,
okay,
our, with
so,
our listeners.
In the late 80s, there's a man who is going to Kent State. And in 1987, he graduates. And soon after that, he begins dating Cynthia Ryland. This man's name is Dave Pilkey.
No way!
And readers and listeners may know Dave Pilkey as the man who wrote Captain Underpants and The Adventures of Dog Man.
And Cat Kid.
Rebecca is not a fan of Dave Pilkey. She doesn't like reading it to our son, who really likes Dave Tolkien.
I am unfortunately a very stereotypical mom, and I do not get it. I don't get it.
At any rate, Dave Tolkien was not yet a famous author at this time. So he himself is just marrying into... He's like marrying into literary acclaim. He himself is not yet an acclaimed author. But I just found this amazing. The fourth Captain Underpants book, which came out in the year 2000, is called Captain Underpants and the Perilous Plot of Professor Poopy Pants. And he dedicates it to Cynthia Riley.
No way! No way. Okay, guys, our son loves that book. He's made his own comic of this specific Captain Underpants volume. It is not dedicated to her.
It is dedicated to
How
her.
How old is he?
I don't know. I can look it up real quick. Okay, but no, this is not about important.
Dave Tolkien. I just am very...
Well, so I did go down
no
a little
way.
Bit. I did go down a little bit of a rabbit hole here because I was trying to find out how long they were together.
Yeah.
Because in 2005, Pilkey marries his current wife.
Okay.
He and Cynthia were never married, but they lived together long enough
that
they moved to different... Like, they both moved to Oregon together, which is where Cynthia eventually relocates to, obviously.
Oh, my gosh.
She's still living in Oregon. I don't know where Pilkey is living. But... I was trying to figure out when did they... Because at first I was like, oh my gosh, are they still together? And then I saw that Pilkey was married. So sometime between 19...
They dated a long time.
They dated a long time. They lived... they moved to Eugene, Oregon in 1993 together. and then I think 2003, Cynthia moved to Portland, Oregon, which is, I believe, where she lives now. So sometime in between... 1993 and 2005, they broke up. Unless Dave Pokey has an open marriage. But,
I want to know the juicy details of this.
Yeah, isn't it wild? Like, how many acclaimed children's authors meet another acclaimed children's author? Or meet someone who they get into a relationship with who later becomes another acclaimed children's
author?
Well,
and to my knowledge, this is the only book by Cynthia Rylant that I've read. But what two different children's authors?
They're quite different.
Do we have that volume of Captain Underpants?
We don't. Okay. In fact, I think our son is getting Professor Poopy Pants from the movie of Captain Underpants, and I don't think he's read this book.
Okay. I'm sorry. This is just riveting. This is riveting.
I'm
awake now.
It's an incredibly funny coincidence that this is who... She's been in quite a few relationships. I think she's been married twice, and then she didn't get married to Pilkey. Who knows why? I mean, it seems like she really lost.
I need to know. More.
But anyway, back to her and her career. Now that we've spent a lot of time talking about her ex boyfriend. So, like I said, 1982 is when she publishes her first children's book, and. She gets a lot of acclaim then. She continues to get acclaim for her writing. She does all sorts of children's books. She's got fiction and nonfiction, poetry. She's got books that are novels. She's got books that are picture books. So she's, like, totally spanning the whole breadth of, you know, children's literature at this point. In 1987, she wins the Newbery Honor Medal for a book called A Fine White Dust. To be honest, there's not a lot of biographical details from her after she moves to Oregon, and I think her life has mostly been just hanging out in Oregon, writing children's books, maybe dating the author of Captain Underpants,
she's 12 years older than him.
Yikes, Cynthia, robbing the cradle for Captain Underpants. I found this quote on one of these old websites that's unsourced, but it is a quote that allegedly Cynthia Rylant said, and I like this. The website is talking about how she doesn't know if she'll be a writer all her life, and she says this quote, "It seems like a long time to keep writing books, a whole lifetime." And so right now, according to this article, which is from 2004, she's happy in her Oregon home collecting teapots and quilts and playing with her dogs and cats. And to that point, She has an author website, CynthiaRylant.com. But if you go to this website, there is a brief note that's maybe 100 words long on here about how she's saying hello from her home in Portland, Oregon, near Portland, Oregon, with her cat. Be sure you play outside and enjoy all the, you know, feed the birds and stuff like that. And then at the bottom of the webpage, it has a mailing address to her publisher if you have fan mail. There are no links on this website. There's only one fairly low-resolution picture of her. A lot of this website looks like it's not been updated since maybe 2002 or probably 2003 since she's living in Portland, Oregon. Anyway, she seems like she's just completely content living the life she wants to live, not really doing the whole rat race thing. She's written 100 children's books. Why does she need to stress herself about anything else?
She dated Dave Pilkey. She's having me.
Yeah. Anyway, that's her. I wasn't sure how interesting she was going to be looking her up, and
that,
lo and behold, she...
That little nugget.
I mean, to be honest, like, what should be more interesting is her growing up without, like, electricity and couldn't read anything but Archie comics, which honestly is maybe what... There's like, some overlap between, like, reading Archie comics and dating the Captain Underpants guy.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
Anyway, wow. So speaking of...
I'm glad I didn't read all the way over your shoulder. I just read Dave Pilkey's name. I did not read the perilous...
The perilous plot of Professor Poopy Pants, which our son thinks is the perilous park of Professor Poopy Pants.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, Rebecca, why don't you tell us about Missing May, the book of the hour.
Let's talk about Missing May. So this book is set in... at that time, what would have been present-day West Virginia. The main character is Summer, and the story is told from her perspective. She has lost her parents. Both her parents have died, and she's been kind of passed around from one relative to the next, none of which seem to have, like, a lot of care and affection for her. And then when she's six, she meets her Aunt May and her Uncle Ob. And
I never found out. Is that supposed to be short for something?
I don't know.
Maybe it's a West Virginia thing.
But they see that even though she's not mistreated, she's basically ignored. So they take her into their small trailer in the hills of the Appalachian Mountains. And she falls in love with them. They fall in love with her. They're a beautiful, happy family. Ob, this is really cute. Ob makes all these... They call whirligigs.
No, it sounds like wind chimes or something.
Or, well, they're more, I know what they're talking about. They don't necessarily make sounds, but, like, they're shiny in the sun and they turn.
Right.
But they're, like, bizarre. They're just, like, way out there. So their whole trailer is just full of these little whirligigs that when the sun shines through, it's just the most beautiful thing to Summer. But 6 years after she moves in, Aunt May dies suddenly. And so obviously Summer is grieving, but she also is very worried about her Uncle Ob, who seems to not only feel like he can't care for Summer anymore, but you can tell that he's suicidal. Like, he's very depressed, potentially suicidal. So he tries contacting May's spirit after he experiences this sensation that she's tried to communicate with him. Summer has a friend from school. I don't know if he's exactly a friend. This guy from school that becomes her friend named Cletus Underwood, which is just such an epic name.
I feel like only a person from West Virginia has permission to name someone from West Virginia Cletus in their novel.
Okay. Like, is that offensive?
I'm just saying it sounds like if you're like conjuring up like backwoods yokel Cletus. Like, there's a Simpsons character who's like...
I didn't have like that connotation with it.
Anyway, it's a real person's name. But anyway, it's also a very stereotypically,
that's his
like,
name.
Backwoods name.
Our buddy Cletus. He is a very quirky fellow that, like, just goes around to people's home. He, like, collects a lot of things, right? Am I remembering that right? Like,
yes, he collects pictures. Well, he collects a lot of different things, but eventually settles on pictures and starts, collecting all these photographs. Like, he clips them out of magazines and stuff.
Yeah. So Summer always kind of thinks he's a little bit odd, but, like, Ob loves him. They kind of, like, talk and connect. So They're like this little community of misfits trying to figure out life after May is gone. So Cletus finds out that there is this spirit medium that who lives in Charleston. So they plan this whole trip to go to Charleston and meet with this medium. And then Cletus is also very fascinated with the idea of like the Capitol, West Virginia, and the Capitol building specifically, and wanting to see it and kind of being enamored where like these are where laws are made. This is where change happens. It's very fancy. So they have this whole trip planned. Well, they get there and they realize that the spirit medium has died. And so Ob is crushed. They are going home. They cancel their hotel reservation. And then all of a sudden, Ob turns around and decides they're going to make the best of their trip and they're going to go to the Capitol. And that's really where it ends. You're just kind of left with the impression that Ob is okay, that he's going to care for Summer, that the three of them are going to stick together. And then periodically in the book, you get these little visions from May that I just kind of assumed was either dreams that Summer was having, or it's like potential messages that she's sending from the other side. So that's really the book. It's short and sweet.
Very short. It's like less than 100 pages.
Yeah. It's 98 pages, according to Wikipedia.
That seems long to me. But I think our copy was actually fewer pages.
Yeah. So, Michael, what did you like about this book?
I mean, it's a short, compact little story that packs in a bunch of, I think, you know, well-rendered emotions. You know, there's like a certain kind of children's book that's about death. And, you know, like Charlotte's Web, you know, which Cynthia Ryland discovered as a librarian. And I think that there are fewer stories in children's literature that are about after death. You know, there's a lot of children's stories where somebody dies, and that's usually like the climax or the end of the book, you know, Old Yeller or, you know, Where the Red Fern Grows or, you know, whatever, Bridge to Terabithia. But this is a book entirely set after the death of her aunt. And you don't really see, or at least I feel like it's really hard to, you know, have someone die. But one of the harder things is figuring out what to do afterwards and like going on.
Mm-hmm.
And this book is not long, you know, but I think it manages to like not simplify the issue. You know, it doesn't feel like that there are pat answers. Like what it feels like is that these people are kind of like stumbling through how to deal with their grief and eventually arrive at something that's not, it's not prosaic, you know. It feels meaningful where it lands at the end, you know, especially for such a short book. You know, it would have been really easy to have like a something that would have, you know, been a nice concrete answer to give people about grief, but wouldn't have felt honest to the characters. And I think that the way it deals with the emotional landscape of this, you know, is really honest about like how these how it feels to wrestle through that sort of thing. I think the central three characters are really, they're all very well drawn and like
mm-hmm.
enjoyable to read about, you know. They all have like very defined like personalities, but also personalities that don't feel like rigid or reductive to like a set of characteristics either. You know, they all feel like fairly nuanced, again, especially for like as short of a book as this is. I like the economy of the book, and I like how even through that economy it's able to accomplish like a lot of a lot of stuff meaningfully, like engaging with the subject matter that it has.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I don't know, it being so short, it's kind of hard to, you know, spend a lot of time talking about like lots of little incidents, but and there's not really a lot of incident
yeah.
in the book, but I just think what it sets out to do, it does well, and you know, does it without taking a lot of time.
Yeah. No, I completely agree. I really like the setting of this book. It reminded me a lot of homes that I've been in and, like, working with families. Like, just small homes that are filled with, like, quirky things that bring them joy. And just seeing that through the eyes of a child, too, like, all those whirligigs. Like, in my head, I was like, oh, that must have looked so tacky. But for her, it's a shining, like, this like, shiny castle sort of thing. And I don't mean that to, like, romanticize poverty or anything. I'm just saying that, like, through the eyes of a child, that's just such a beautiful thing to have someone not only pay attention to her, but create something that brings them joy in their home.
Yeah, and I think a lot of the book is like that, where it's taking things that, like, I think outsiders, especially outsiders who, you know, have had a wider range of experiences than the, you know, Summer in this book, you know, who's lived in just rural West Virginia her whole life. Like, you know, a lot of the things we would view as simple or straightforward, or even sometimes, like, I think there's probably a tendency to, like, scoff at stuff like the faith healer or things like that, you know. But, like, in the context that they're living in, like, these things that might otherwise be small, like, have a great deal of meaning to them. And there's kind of a dignity given to them because it kind of, it shows how, like, you know, these are not things that have to matter in the scope of, like, global events, because they matter to the people that are actually interacting with them.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, I think an awesome example of that is, like, at the end of the book where they visit, like, Charleston, West Virginia, which is probably, like, nobody's, you know, destination vacation unless that is a meaningful thing for you in your context, you know? And, like, this kind of, like, aspiration of, you know, being in West Virginia and wanting to see where the laws are made that, like, govern you, you know, I think it does a good job of showing, like, why that would be meaningful to someone, even though, like, even me living in Tennessee, like, going to Charleston, like, that wouldn't be meaningful to me. But it is for them, and it does a good job of really showing why it's meaningful to them.
And I think learning that those pieces about her childhood is really enlightening, too, because she understands that a place like Charleston would be, like, the most, like, exciting place that you can think of if you're living in, like, an isolated area.
Well, and it,
like,
was probably place, for her, you know, she...
Like, a place that's close to things happening, like... really important, exciting things happening. Like, that's their world. I also think she does this cool thing with, like, she's weaving in different stories from other people's past while also remaining in the perspective of Summer. So May, when she was a baby, there was another flood. There's another flood. There's so many, like, I'm just reading so many books right now, these devastating, like, floods in mountainous regions while we're watching that happen. But there's this flood that happened, and May's mother had put her in like this
isn't it in a bathtub?
It's like a little tub. And her parents died, and she was rescued because someone found this baby, like, floating in the basin. So she just, like, tells that story, like, weaves it into what Summer is experiencing with this very, like, emotional tell that makes you just really, like, grieve for the characters, but also you don't feel overwhelmed by, like, all the backstory, you know?
Yeah, and in fact, like, the biggest, you know, you would think that that's what the book would be about, would be, like, this kind of cataclysmic flood, but it's not. It's about, you know, this
life
very
after
small
the flood.
Life after the flood.
And life after the death.
Life after the death, right, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. So I think it's brilliantly done. I think it's a very beautiful book. Like I said, I love this little community of misfits of, like, Cletus. And May's kind of in that, too, you know? They're kind of, they do go and visit their family every once in a while. That was important to May. It's May's family that they visit in. Is it Ohio?
I don't remember.
Which is where they got Summer from. Like, the family that was there were the ones that were caring for her. So they, like, go back and visit them, but when they get home, it's truly being home. I also like that there's a lot of supernatural elements that this book is tinged without it overwhelming the novel. Like, this is not a book about, like, ghosts, but there are kind of ghosts in it. You know, yeah. This is not a book about, like, speaking to people in the afterlife, although that happens. You know, like, I just...
I'm curious, like, because it was a little ambiguous to me. Like, do you think we're meant to... Like, there's a chat... Like, there's a few... Like you mentioned, a few pages from the end of the book, there's a section that's written from May.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that seems to be, like, from... I don't know what, heaven or something like that. And it's after Summer has fallen asleep. And it's ambiguous to me, like, these little twinges of supernatural. Like, are they literally meant to have happened? Or is this, like, you know, a kind of subjective, like, how Summer is wrestling through this? She's kind of, like, imagining, like, here's what May would have told me at this moment.
That's what I love about it, because that's the whole thing Summer's trying to figure out the whole time of this book. She's very suspicious of the supernatural pieces. She's very suspicious of this medium. She doesn't want to go, but she wants... Cletus is very excited, and Ob is very excited. And she's only going on this journey because she's like, I might not have a caregiver if something doesn't change. And so I feel like that ambiguity there for us as the reader is really reflecting the same ambiguity that Summer is experiencing throughout this book. Like, maybe this could be real. I don't really think it is, but I want it to be, because this is kind of like my only chance of staying here and maybe Ob's only chance of survival. So it's like super high stakes in a story that's fairly short and sweet, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know. Those are things that I liked.
Yeah. Well,
is there anything that you disliked?
Not exactly. I mean, I think like what's in it is good. I don't know that it would be better if it were longer, but there are definitely things that I feel like we could have had more about.
Mm-hmm.
Were this to be longer. I wouldn't necessarily say that's a flaw of it. I do think that Cletus is not a bad character, but of the three, he's the one that feels like the least fleshed out, and he's kind of like this weird, you know, quirky guy. You know, if this book were written now, he probably would have like an autism diagnosis or something like that. And the book doesn't need to go into that amount of detail with him, but because we're in Summer's point of view the whole time, and a lot of times Summer is just kind of frustrated with him being this kind of like kind of strange guy who's just always interested in like, here's a photo, what's the story behind this photo? Or someone's inventing stories behind photos. Like, I do feel like he's the one that we know the least about. And, like, since the end of the book is kind of hinged on, like, a big part of it is hinged on him feeling that sense of wonder of finally being in the Capitol building in Charleston. Maybe it would have helped if we had a little bit more... But I don't know how... You would have to change the structure of the book, because the reason why he's a little bit less fleshed out is because he's not part of their nuclear family.
Mm-hmm.
Although
I do like the scene where they go and visit his family.
Mm-hmm. That's a very good, because they have to basically ask the family, can he go on this trip with us?
But they lie to them.
They do lie to his family. And what is it that they say? That's the lie. They don't tell them that they're going to the Faith Healer. They're just going on a trip to the Capitol, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which I guess ends up being true, accidentally. But I don't know. I mean, none of those things are things that I would say were flaws or things I didn't like about the book. But these are things that I could imagine were the book a little different. These are things I might have also enjoyed about the book that aren't currently in the book, I guess.
Yeah. The only thing this isn't really something I disliked in terms of, like, the structure of the novel or the writing style or anything, but I do wish that a caregiver would not lie to another caregiver about where they're taking their child. I have pretty big qualms with that, but that's...
Yeah.
You know. I feel like that's kind of glossed over and kind of laughed at, but, like,
Yeah.
That's kind of a black and white thing to me.
I would be upset if that happened to one of our kids. But also, like, that scene is so interesting because they're expecting to have to do a lot of convincing of this family. And they're, like, unsure of, like, what Cletus's home life is like. You know, they think he's been hanging around here a lot. Maybe his home life isn't good. And they find it to be, like, a perfectly sweet family who is, like, really happy that he gets to go on this trip or whatever. And they don't really have to do a lot of convincing. Like, it's a really disarming scene, even though they're just lying to these parents that don't end up seeming to need to be lied to.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I thought it was a great little story. I mean,
children's books often are not that long, but there's not that many children's books that I've read that I would classify as, they're like the equivalent of a novella for children, but that's definitely what this is.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like it has the scope of a full novel, but it's not like a picture book either, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, thumbs up?
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. It's good. It's good. I wonder what our other books are like. There's 99 plus other ones.
Surely we've read some of them. She wrote those Henry and Mudge books, which I've not read those, but I've definitely seen them.
I don't even know if I know what that is.
It's about a dog. You know us and dog books.
Okay.
But anyway, our next book that we're going to read is the 2005 winner. It's called Kira Kira. Who's it by?
Yeah, it's by... I did write it down. It's by someone named Cynthia again. It's by Cynthia Katohata. We don't know anything about this book.
Nope.
Which we didn't know anything about Missing May either. So maybe we'll get another gem. You know, we've had good luck with Cynthia so far. So anyway, do you have anything else, Rebecca?
I don't think so.
Yeah, short episode this time. Don't forget you can leave us feedback at newberrychronicles@gmail.com. I guess that's about it.
Thanks for listening.
Bye, everybody.